Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Five Rounds Podcast, the only podcast out there with the cardio for those deep water championship rounds. I am Mags, and with me today, my son Carlos. Carlos, how are you?
Fresh and loving this early start to the UFC. Yeah. Glad it were in Abu Dhabi, but glad it started at, what, 8 over in the main card? So we've not long to finish it, 11 o'clock at night, and I've still got a couple of hours in me to...
Yeah, I mean, sucks to be American sometimes, but when it comes good for us Brits, it comes good for us Brits. Yeah, that was a quality time to start a UFC pay-per-view. If COVID's done anything, it's helped us Brits get more action at normal times. But yeah, we've literally just finished watching UFC on ABC 1. UFC, Fat Island, blah blah blah, Holloway versus Qatar.
And the first event on ABC, might
add. Yeah, first event on ABC, first event of the year, and goddamn did that this event bring it. We'll quickly go through these prelims. So we started with Jacob Kilburn losing by decision to Austin Lingo in the featherweight. Then we got Vanessa Mello picking up the decision against Sarah Morris in the women's bantamweight. Another decision with Ramazan Imeev picking up the decision against David Zawada in the welterweight. And then another decision, Carlos Felipe and Justin Taffer in the heavyweights, absolutely punching the living shit out of each other. And then to round off the prelims, we had yet another decision. Jocelyn Edwards picking up another victory with a one-sided win over Yanan Wu. So that boded well that we're probably going to get a lot of decisions on this main card. No, not really. We started off with three first round knockouts. What a way to start a year of UFC events. So first fight was Pernille Soriano taking on Dusko Todorovic. Both of these guys walking into this fight unbeaten. I think Pernille was 7-0 going into this, and Todorovic was 10-0. Todorovic started off easily the more confident in this fight. It was opening up with some low kicks, but what Soriano was very economical with his shots. He threw some huge shots, but he didn't throw the kind of velocity that Todorovic was throwing. But every time he threw, it landed. And I think that was what made the difference in this. There were a couple of times where he knocked the mouth guard out of Todorovic's mouth with the shots. And at one point, the mouth guard actually fell down the grate that goes around the edge of the octagon. So he kind of got a bit of a reprieve from that shot, because he had time to recover whilst they pulled the set apart to find his mouth guard. But it was too little too late, and his confidence was not well founded, because as soon as he got his mouth guard back for the second time, he got smacked clean in the mouth, went down. He tried to do a submission to grab the leg, but the ref just came in, said, "Nope, this is over. You've been hit way too much." And to be fair, he could see he was disappointed in his own performance, but what a way to lose for the first time, getting absolutely demolished by Pernille Soriano.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't take away his performance. He went in there, worked out a good game plan and stuck to it. Like I say, after when he's knocked his mouthpiece out, I love the fact how Herb Dean was trying to stick his fingers down the side of a canvas to try and dig the mouthpiece out, and then it was like, fuck this, get me a second mouthpiece.
He didn't have a second mouthpiece. That was the point. That's why I was thinking that this fight might actually get waved off. It was Herb did try and get into the grate, but one of Todorovic's cornermen actually pulled the grate up, and he was able to get the mouthpiece. But I think if he didn't have that second mouthpiece, that fight was going to get waved off for a no contest, which would have been unfair, really, I thought, to Soriano, because God, that guy hits like a sledgehammer for a middleweight.
No, not absolutely. Because if I didn't get called off through that, would have got obviously called off through some sort of stoppage, and he would have got the win. Because I'm sure they've got checklists when the referee goes into the back and they basically go over it. I'm sure they have to do that. They have to have certain stuff with them. I think it's like certain gloves or certain like fart wearing gear and stuff.
I think it depends from commission to commissioner. With Abu Dhabi being such new territory, it may be a point that they don't have those guidelines in place. But yeah, they certainly didn't get the second gun shield. It was they dug the original one out of the grate.
Well, I hope they washed it off. but Cerriano, his second first round finish in the UFC and going on to being 8-0 in the middleweight division, which is a good division, especially to get two finishers and moving on up in the ranks. Obviously, this win doesn't throw him right up there into the big dogs, but you never know, a couple more wins and you could get up there. But going on to the finish, I do believe it was stopped a little bit early. Now, I can understand that, yeah, the referee was just early. He was just doing his job. It was, like, I'm not saying it was wrong to stop the fight. Obviously, it's his call. But at the end of the day, it's the referee's call. It's the last judgment, either the referee or the doctor. So it's either their call and nobody else's. So he was doing what were best for the fighter. But when I look at it as, if you're a professional fighter, you, I know it's going to sound stupid, but you should be trained enough to be able to take shots like that. And it's not like he was fully out when he was fighting back. He was holding the leg, trying to fight back, and he wasn't fully out. Or he to me anyway, it did, or on the TV, it didn't look to be out or to be hurt to an extent where he couldn't fight back. So could the fight have gone on? Yeah, potentially. Could the outcome have been the same? More than likely. But yeah, I would have liked that fight to go on just a little bit longer. But again, Herbie's there to do a job, and he's looking out for the fighter's safety and the well-being of the fighter. And if he thinks to himself that this fighter's took more damage than what's necessary and he's not defending it, then he's well within his right to stop the fight. So no judgment towards him.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think it sounded like, to me, it was probably a little bit early. To Herb Dean's defence, like you said, he's there to protect the fighters. But the guy did lose his gum shield twice in the fight. He was knocked down several times. Maybe Herb had seen enough over the course of the first round. I would have liked to have seen him survive that last 12 seconds or so, get to a second round and see where the landlord there. But a great win for Soriano should at least help put his name in some other fighters' mindsets, and maybe he'll get a bigger fighter. But let's go into the second fight, another middleweight fight, and another first round finish. Joaquin Buckley coming off the back of a massive heart trim after his ninja style knockout recently. The biggest favourite on the card by a long, long way, taking on Alessio Chiricchio, who was basically in there to be fodder to build up this hype train of Joaquin Buckley. Not happening on Alessio's watch. He was not there to just make up numbers. Came out instantly with front kicks down the middle. Buckley, I thought, was he's always explosive. I like his the way he has the stance, where he's very wide. He's hard to kind of assess with him being a natural southpaw. A lot of fighters can get trouble with him, and he can fire those kicks off pretty rapidly. And his punches are just so brutal. But his accuracy was just not on point. Chiricchio was able to slip a lot of his shots. And then he landed a nice little stepping up knee, and then went for a head kick, which absolutely landed clean shin to temple. And Buckley was out cold. Chiricchio did what any fighter would do. He rubber stamped him with a few shots. Fight waved off by Keith Peterson, and Buckley tried to say that he was fine, but when you saw him try and walk and stand up, his legs were stiff. His legs were still knocked out, even though his eyes were open and his lips were moving. What a victory for Dietrich, who everybody thought was basically just fodder for Joaquin Buckland. Yeah, he's really made a name for himself with this win.
Yeah, Buckley would definitely do it stanky leg as soon as he stood up, and I don't think he can use Dominic's excuse of fucking cigarettes and alcohol after. But yeah, personally, I think Buckley made a stupid mistake. At the end of the day, his opponent watched enough of his fart tape to understand that Buckley drops his hands a lot, and he does. And it should have been on Buckley and his coaches to look at that and look at that and understand the self that, yeah, I am dropping my hands a lot, and yes, you are dropping your hands a lot, and we need to do something about that. The fact is that he hasn't. He's just took these two wins on the head and basically ran with it, and it's like, right, again, I don't want to say it, blowing smoke up his arse or this next big thing, because it's not like he's been pushed like Chimaev and some of these other guys, but the knockout certainly helped him get to where he is, and especially the R's that's on him. So he should have definitely trained or did something about dropping his hands a lot, because that's what lost him the fight. And Alicio knew that, and when DC said commentary, he was saying that open up the body kicks, throw kicks to the arms, because even though if he doesn't connect clean to the head, he's going to drop his arms because the hurt, and take his legs away so it stops him moving forward, because that's what Buckley is. He's a power fighter and a pressure fighter. He hits hard and he'll move forward, and if you can't stop him from doing that, it's more than likely it's going to go in his favour and he's going to knock you out. And Alicio had a great answer to that, with countering that with drawing him in, making Buckley think it's safe to go in, and next thing before you know it, Buckley's just been cracked with a beautiful roundhouse kick that has perfectly opened him up, because he always drops his hand, and his right hand side is always open. And again, like Rockhold with going up to the left hook Larry, and he can always get knocked out with that left hook. It's the exact same situation with that. Bisping knocked him out of it, and then Blachowicz knocked him out of it.
It's a massive weakness.
Yeah, and it's a weakness that it'll quickly get exploited if you don't do something about it. Because now he's been punished with it. Look at DC when Bones basically figured out that you're weak on this side, and I can hit you more potentially whenever I want. And he were able to basically go on that the second time, and eventually knock him out. And a lot of other fighters do the same. And again, I think Buckley's, if he didn't buck his ideas up, he's probably going to get knocked out again with either a left hook or another high kick. And there's, when you're looking for the knockout all the time, because obviously he came in, he's got two fights, two knockouts. His first knockout was spectacular, then his second knockout was just like a Francis Ngannou knockout. He was just going forward and absolute throwing
like
bombs.
Power.
Yeah, and that were it. And so that's what worked for him. And most majority of the time, when you're that sort of guy who looks for that, if you're not one of these technically sound strikers who can get away with doing that, because you're better than most majority of the guys, you sort of do open yourself up to dangerous shit like this. And he definitely opened himself up to the head kick, and Alicio did perfect to counter it. And I know a lot of people are going to probably jump on it and go, oh, he probably got lucky and stuff like that, but no, he fucking didn't. Alicio,
put in the work in.
That's it. Alicio made his debut in the UFC in 2016. He has been around the block longer than Buckley's even probably been fighting professionally. So it's not a case of, oh, he got a lucky shot. No, he watched his tape, he put the hard work in, he knew that Buckley dropped his hands for that right-hand side, and he knew eventually, I'm going to get him with that left hockey. And I guarantee, if you were to look back on the paperwork that they put through their camp, I guarantee that somewhere on them points, it was to finish that fight off with that high kick, because he dropped his hand, and they executed it perfectly. And a lot of people, it pissed me off, because a lot of people was underestimating him, and like you were saying, he got put in there as cannon fodder. He was another guy for Buckley to run through, and absolutely not the case. He's not one of the guys who have been a well-known guy or a massive name guy, but so the people who aren't casual fans, Alessio has been around the block enough to know if you're an experienced fart fan, and if you've watched more than one of his farts, you know that this is a guy who generally comes to fart. He don't come to fuck about. And when he comes to fart, you've got to deal with this sort of shit. And Buckley didn't. Buckley got paid the price for that.
Absolutely. So after that, the middle of this main card went to the welterweight division. Santiago Ponzinibbio taking on Li Jingliang. And something that they said on commentary that I wasn't aware of. Obviously, we know that Ponzinibbio's had lots of issues with injuries and illness, and he's not really fought that much in the UFC over this last few years or so. But he's been doing the commentary for the Spanish output for UFC, which is, yeah, that's at least is kind of like keeping in the system, which is really cool for him, because I think his farting days may be coming quickly to an end, because he was totally outclassed in this fight against Li Jingliang. The first minute or so of this round, they were quite nervous. You could see that both were trying to test the range, see how far they could get before getting into danger. But the problem was that a lot of the testing was coming from Li rather than Santiago. He just didn't seem to be willing to pull the trigger on any kind of shots. Li was able to land leg kicks and jabs with pretty much no comeback at all, and we even get to the point where the crowd started booing, because there was just very few shots being thrown, especially from Santiago. But the leg kicks really did start to make a difference. You could see the welts upon Santiago's legs. He then finally starts to throw, throws a shot to like an overhand right, but he gets caught with a left hook that just lands on the chin, and he's clean out cold, absolutely out cold, and the fight was over 4.5 minutes, and Li Jingliang has got the biggest win of his career so far.
Absolutely. The guy is sort of stumbled in his UFC career. He made his debut in 2014, mm-hmm. and he's always been one of these guys who's gone one win, one loss, two wins, one loss.
Well, his UFC record's 10-4 after this fight.
That's it. Since 2018, I think he's on that 3-2.
Yeah. Just not been able to get that momentum.
Yeah, now whether that's lack of opponent, or obviously with all this COVID going on and all that sort of stuff, but obviously that weren't around in 2014 when he made his debut. So he's always been up and down, and with this fight, I've seen it as a true challenge for him. Like, can he get past Santiago? Because we've seen Santiago's a couple of fights. He's a natural born fighter, and like we say, with his injuries, he's got a commentary job with the UFC. If you've got that sort of thing behind you, it's sort of good to say, like you were on about, when do I say enough of the fight career and be a lot more of a commentator. You know you're going to have paydays there, you know you're going to have income, and you're still surrounded in the sport you love. But again, it was definitely a tough fight for him. He didn't really turn up to fight. When I look at, obviously, Santiago, it didn't look like he did in his last couple of fights. It looked like he was one of these fighters who just turned up because he needed the money. He needed a payday. And I don't think he sort of took it seriously. And with the fighters like Li, especially like DC said earlier on in the event, when you look at China now and look at some of these athletes and fighters that are coming out of China, and look at how dominant China have been over the last couple of Olympics, I think they're just behind America with like medals and stuff like that. So they're getting up there, and we're going to see more and more Chinese athletes in the next couple of years.
Well, that's what happens. One thing that China is good at is kind of backing their their athletes. We've seen it in sports in Britain, just like, for example, snooker. What happens is the Chinese will focus on a certain sport, and they'll plough loads and loads of money in it, and they'll really kind of push their talented athletes in whatever sport, and basically that becomes their career. And that's because they want to be the best in everything, and it works at the end of the day. If you look at the snooker rankings, there's so many like Chinese born snooker players who were rising up. Like I think it was DC who said on the commentary, China are now second only to the US for amounts of medals that they pick up in the Olympics, and that's because they want to be the best, so they throw as much funds at it as possible.
Well, that's it, and Lee's just one of these athletes who's showing that sort of mindset is paying off, because the Wei Li Shan were the first Chinese-born UFC champion, and we're only seeing more talented Chinese fighters coming out, and especially with one being over there and so many eyes being on one, we're getting... It's easy for the UFC, instead of to sending representatives over there to scout these people, instead of Dana going over there to scout new people, with one being over there and these other organisations that are getting more eyes on them, it's easier for the Western eyes, promotions, UFC, Bellator, Cage Warriors, to sort of pick these fighters up, and a lot of these fighters will take these opportunities because it's, yeah, fair enough. One and Bellator and Cage Warriors might pay you decent monies and might offer you a decent deals, but the end goal is a UFC belt. That's it's like if you were in NFL, you want a ring, Super Bowl ring. If you're in the Premier League, you want that trophy. If you're a snooker player, you want that snooker championship at the end of the year. You're the one who want to lift that trophy.
Yeah, the fact is, nobody enters MMA to go, oh, I want to be the Bellator world champion.
Exactly.
Or I want to be the one world champion. It's my goal is to be a UFC champion.
Well, that's it.
They're the standard bearers.
Absolutely. Because they're the ones who set that benchmark. They're the ones who are known all the way around the world for having the best elite athletes. And if you can be this guy who beats all them lot in your weight category and lifts that UFC belt, and not only does that, but defends it more than once, you can't be said that you're not one of the best fighters in the world, because you've proved it on the world's biggest stage. It's like being a wrestler and winning the main event in WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
But you've made it then. That's the dream goal, winning the WWE belt at WrestleMania, the main event. If you've done that, that's your wrestling career done. If you finished it the day after, would you be happy? Because that's the dream for a lot of people, and it's the same for the UFC. You win that belt and you defend it, that's your career. You can be one of these handful of people who make it. And I think, like I say, with Lee, with the performance he's had at making his debut so far back, I think he's just the pathway we see into Chinese fighting that we did with Michael Bisping opening up the gateway to English mixed martial arts. I think these are the fighters, Wei Li Zhang and Li, who are opening up the way to the Chinese athletes, and more eyes are going to get on them. And I hope he gets a bigger name and a bigger rank.
Yep.
And I hope he gets a push. He's been in the UFC for, 2014, up and down. So I can imagine that he's not wanting to stick around for a lot longer. Yeah, I don't see me... Like, in this sort of sport, you don't want to have your body beat up and making absolutely no money, where he could probably make the same amount of money for the amount of time he fights back home working in the gym. So, yeah, hopefully in the future he gets a bigger name and a better rank.
Yeah, I agree. So let's go into this co-main event. Two oldest foot fighters from back in the day of UFC, and one of them even from before that in WEC, Matt Brown versus Carlos Condit. Carlos Condit, who is a massive favourite of ours. I mean, Matt Brown's a massive favourite of ours just because of the way he brings it in fights. And this did not disappoint whatsoever. Went the distance, Condit picking up the unanimous decision. and quite a fair result for me. I think the first round was probably Matt Brown's most successful round. He spent a lot of time in top control. There's an argument to say that maybe he could have won that round. None of the judges gave him the round. I think all three judges gave it 30-27 to Condit. But there is an argument to say that he had that top control. He was on top for, I think it was about 3.5 minutes of the 5 minutes. But Condit was so good at attacking off his back that he ended up busting open Matt Brown with his shots. And then as we got further and further into the fight, and Condit was landing so many good shots, throwing shots from different angles. The leg kicks were really powerful. The body shots, the punches to the ribs and the face. He really tore Matt Brown up, like really kind of like damaged his face. And then Condit was able to take the fight to the ground as well, really kind of like put a lot of pressure on Matt Brown. And his way of, I mean, I think he's got a very underrated ground game as Carlos Condit. And I thought that he put Matt Brown in a lot of pressure. And it sometimes felt like that Matt Brown just, he wasn't at the races for this fight, but whenever it got to the ground, Condit just was so calm and so confident. Even when he was on the, even when he was on his back, or he was the one in control, he just took that extra like half a second just to assess his situation, really keep Matt Brown guessing at what he was doing, and was able to have a get an attempt at submission or get back to the feet and start laying the shots into Matt Brown's face again. It was pretty much a lot of that for the third round as well. Again, Matt Brown ended up in, there was actually one move that Condit did where he was on the ground and he was able to slip Matt Brown and get top control. But for me, the highlight of this fight was that gorgeous takedown that he did. I think it was in the second, or maybe it was early in the third, where he slipped past Matt Brown and was able to trip him and almost give him it was almost like a side slam. Really good takedown, really well controlled, really showing off his kind of versatility in MMA. But I've got to give Matt Brown his props. He didn't want to be finished, and he was able to take it to the judges. But Carlos Condit picks up a victory that I think he needed just for his own kind of a mentality. Me and Carlos were talking, and we assumed that this may be looking at the end for both guys. But Carlos Condit after the fight calling out quite a few guys, saying he's just wanting to fight, he's got that passion back. And so yeah, I can't wait to see another Carlos Condit fight, because like I said, he's one of our very favourites here at Five Rounds.
Yeah, that's it. Well, Matt Brown, the old dog, he's still got fight left in him, and he's shown that tonight, but I just don't think it's enough. He's a brilliant coach. He's got some talented fighters underneath him, and I believe it's time. And I think Dana, if he was here, he'd agree with me. And a lot of other fighters, I think, would say the same. I think it's time for Matt Brown to put his gloves down, and time to actually fight on passing his knowledge to the younger generation. Because he's a brilliant coach. Some of the fighters he's got, some of the knowledge he's passed on to his fighters that he's already got now, and the fighters that he could have in the future. I think he could make, if he put his time into that full time, I think he could be one of these coaches that actually produce world champions. Mm-hmm. He knows what he's doing. He's been around a long time. Yes, he's took some losses, but
He's always been at that elite level.
Yeah, he's always been fighting the best of the best. He's not one of these guys to go, right, I want to take a break, I want to take a B-level fighter. Say in the UFC, when I want to take a bill off, I want to take a bit more of an easier fighter. He doesn't give a shit like that. He basically, when the UFC rings him or he's ready to have a fight, it's just like, right, who've you got? First guy, dangerous guy, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Sort of like Rafael Dos Anjos. Like, these are the sort of guys who come from a different generation that go, I don't give a fuck what his name is or what his background is. If you're offering me to fight him and you're paying me, I'll fucking fight him. Mm-hmm. I couldn't care. And that's why I believe he's a brilliant coach. Because if he has that mindset in a fighter, just imagine what sort of mindset he'll have as a coach if he's backing you. And I'd love to be one of these fighters. I'd love to spend a week, a fortnight with Matt Brown as my head coach and giving me some techniques. He'd be a brilliant coach for a lot of people. But yeah, I do believe that it's time for him to hang his gloves up and pass his knowledge on. He's been a brilliant fighter. So there's no point in teching. Because I always, after obviously hurting my own back and coming back from that injury, and then especially looking at how dangerous fighting is. Now, I'll give it to it. Fighting's a lot, people might not believe it, but a fighting's a lot more safer than it is playing rugby or football with the head injuries and stuff like that. But it's still unnecessary damage that you're going to put on your body, especially going to an older age and you're not looking at climbing the ranks, you're not looking at fighting a top five, you're not looking at championship fights or championship money. And I think with the UFC obviously making some of these cutbacks and putting fighters on lower contracts, it's not like, especially after a couple of losses, you're not going to be basically in the position to bargain more money out of them for different fights. So I've always thought to myself, if you're not fighting for that reason, what's the point? Especially when you can, like I said, when he can be a brilliant coach full time and pass his knowledge along. He's one of these guys who have sort of got that pathway already set out for him. So he's not going to be one of these fighters that are going to go back out. Like Tim Sylvia, for instance, 10 years down the line, he's basically wanting to sue the UFC because the UFC won't help him out to remove or replace the rods he's got in his arm from what Frank Mir broke fucking a decade ago. I don't, Matt Brown's not going to be in that position if he goes down that route. But Carlos Condit, man, same name as me, of course I want him to fucking win. He's been one of my favourite fighters for ages, and it was gut-wrenching because Dan Order has been one of my, if not my favourite fighter throughout my life. And when them two fought, I thought to myself, for fuck's sake, I liked him because he's got the same name as me, I've always rooted for him, always wanted him to win. But now he's fighting our countrymen. I was fighting literally the guy who I've literally got a book of at my bedside table, and I literally, every now and again when I need to get fucking by, I'll just give it a quick read. And I thought to myself, shit, am I watching this? First when he beat him, I was pissed off. I'm like, fuck this guy. But then I quickly got over that. See, again, you can't be pissed off at Carlos Condit for long. Come on, the guy farts like an absolute fucking warrior. If you don't like his farts, you're not either a fan or you're just fucking stupid. It's as simple as that. Like, he comes to fight, he comes to put on a war, and doesn't matter who he's fighting, you're going to be excited. Even the fight with him and Nick Diaz, that people were saying, oh, that were a bit boring, that fight. It weren't boring. And this fight was not boring. And obviously like we said, I think it might be time for both of them after this fight. They've both had an amazing run. Condit being the former WEC champion, and yeah, he's even the former UFC or interim champion. But like you were saying, after a performance like that, especially a dominant performance over Matt Brown, like I said to you, like, go out on top. Why would you not? Especially putting on a performance like that over Matt Brown, it's not an easy fight, not an easy name, and you've just won all three rounds. You could go out on top and be happy about that, but that's the fighter in him, that's the old style fighter that he don't think like that. Like you were saying, after the fight, you were throwing out different names, and it's like, that's admirable to a lot of people, especially me, because I did believe before this fight, maybe they might retire together in the octagon, but I was highly wrong, and after that performance, I'm glad I'm wrong, because if he has got the passion back, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, just go and watch the fucking fight between him and Robbie Lawler, then you'll know what I'm talking about. And if he's got that same passion back, that welterweight division is going to be exciting once more.
Yeah, absolutely. I know he spoke in his last couple of fights that he's been thinking of retiring, and Dana's always said, once you mention the R word, you should do it. But I'm glad that Carlos has proved us wrong, because...
Like I do.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, Jesus Christ, let's get into this main event. I don't think anything that me and Carlos can say about this main event is going to do it justice.
Absolutely
If you, for any reason, listen to us without watching the event, I implore you to go and watch this fight. We are 16 days into 2021, and we will struggle to get a better fight than this. This will be fight of the year. I am 99.99% convinced of that. Max Holloway versus Calvin Kattar. Max obviously coming back off those two losses to Alex Volkanovski, where he lost his title and was unable to gain it back. Kind of not looking like the fighter that we've known him to be, especially when he went on that 13 fight win streak. Basically one of the pound for pound best fighters in the world. This Max Holloway that fought in this fight is without a shadow of a doubt the best Max Holloway I have ever seen, and I've watched Max Holloway since his debut in the UFC. And I can't think of a better performance than he had with this one. And it's testament to Calvin Kattar's chin that he did not get sparked out in this fight. This motherfucker was like the Terminator. His brain was switched off, but his body just would not go down. I've got to give him all the props in the world. Over the five rounds, Max broke the record for the amount of significant strikes, but he didn't just break it by one or two. This guy added nearly 200 extra strikes to that record. He threw 744 total significant strikes, landing 445, 274 headshots to Calvin Kattar. 274.
The motherfucker just won't go down.
And each round was absolutely dominant for Max, to the point where one judge gave 3 10-8 rounds and the other two gave 2 10-8 rounds. Calvin Kattar just got absolutely lit up. The first round was arguably his best round. He landed a couple of good shots, and to be fair to Kattar, it's not like this was a one-sided ass whooping. I mean, it was a one-sided ass whooping, but he was landing his own shots. He was still able to catch Max. It's just that Max just came with that volume, and it wasn't just volume in terms of punching him in the face. It was so varied with his shots. There was kicks in there. The body shots were absolutely brutal. The spin kicks to the gut were just you could see the ribs breaking. You could see the oxygen come out of Kattar's lungs. The fence rescued that guy multiple times, and this is a fight that didn't go down to the ground whatsoever. Max was just so confident from the very second he went in. The DC said it perfectly. This is a Max who is happy, who is he's blessed. He was ready to come to fight, and he went for a war. And it's only by the grace of God that Calvin Kattar did not go down. He got to a point in the fifth round where Max was talking to the commentary team whilst Calvin Kattar was there. And this wasn't him being cocky. This was him telling people, look, I'm the best. And whilst he was doing that, he was still dodging and slipping punches and landing no-look punches. He was looking at DC at the commentary team whilst he's smacking Calvin Kattar in the face and then ducking and slipping shots. The guy was unreal. This is the very best Max Holloway I have ever seen in all the time I've watched his fights. What a great victory. Just, it don't get any more dominant for me without it being a finish.
Exactly. Max Holloway, total strikes, 746 strikes he threw in this fight, which is more than any other fighter in the space of 25 minutes. Kelvin Kattar took 290 something to the face. And
274 headshots.
274 to the face, and he just would not go down, and he threw 284 of his own shots, consisting of both of them throwing a combined 1,030 shots in the space of 25 minutes.
That's nearly double Weili Zhang against
fucking
Joanna.
Mental. Absolutely mental. Like the commentary team says, I don't know what it is about them farts in January, but fuck me, why did they all have to be fart of the years? Like, they set a benchmark for any other farting. Now, I will be a happy fart fan and a happy man if all these events live up to this fucking expectation. If if Dana White's got this sort of shit planned for us and this shit in store for us, I am excited. I won't illegally stream the shit if you've got this sort of stuff fucking planned for us. I probably am going to, but yeah, Max Holloway, you've got to give it to him. He were on fucking fire. Mm-hmm. He's, don't want to say it, but I'm going to, he's the Max Holloway of old. He's probably going to come back and he's probably going to take that title back. He's 29 years of age. The commentary team said, fart is in this day and age now. Obviously, I did the 5 rounds interviews, go and check it out. But when I talk to a couple of fighters on there, we always speak about how modern mixed martial arts has always moved on. And you, before it was like, look at Max when he got signed, when he made his professional debut at 18 years of age. Mm-hmm. A lot of people in this day and age are only making the professional debut at like 26 years of age. A lot of them are only getting signed to these big promotions at what, 28, 30 years of age. You only see these spectacular ones that who were 22 and up, who were getting signed, who come far and few between, off those of the Dana White Contender Series, who are doing it, making absolutely no money, but they'll do it just because it's the UFC. Like we said, it's the biggest stage of them all. You get an opportunity to fight for the UFC, you're stupid not to take it at the end of the day. And Max took that opportunity. Now look at him, he didn't have to. He could have easily said, whoa, you dickheads, I thought I won that fight in the last fight between Volkov, and like I say, I'll give it to him. Yeah, it was a very close fight. Did he win that fight? I don't believe so. I believe so. Volkanovski did push the wrestler in the last couple of rounds to edge that victory. But like I said, it was close enough to where I'd believe myself that they should have run that back straight away. Now, Max is a true fighter and a true champion. He didn't give a shit about them saying, no, we're not going to run it back. They've given the title fight to Ortega. He was not bothered. He's like, right, on to the next one. Who's next? Who am I going to fight next? And they give him Kelvin Kattar, and not an easy opponent, absolutely not an easy opponent, and we've seen that, because they don't know what the fuck he's made out of. Granite, steel, I ain't got a fucking clue what he's made out of, but
I mean,
he weren't going down for fuck all.
We were talking whilst watching the fight, and I honestly think the only thing that would have took Kelvin Kattar down in that fight was a gun.
It's a fucking shot.
Or a bat. Like some sort of bat. Or a taser. In fact, I think he would walk for a taser with the amount of shots he took to the face.
Well, he's an absolute tank, but if you're Volkanovski, what are you doing? Are you thinking to yourself, shit, do I need to get it gym? Are you shitting your pants? Are you thinking, for fuck's sake, what have I got myself into? I'm going to have to fart, Max. But like I was saying to you, in that fart, if I'm Volkanovski, I'm shitting myself and thinking to myself, shit, either way, I'm farting, it's going to be an hard as fuck training camp, because if Max comes the way he does in this fart, it's going to be a fart. But obviously, if Kelvin won, which unfortunately he didn't, but if he did win, it would have been like, shit, this guy's a fucking Terminator who don't go down. What the fuck do I have to do to put him down? Volkanovski, he's not one of the punching guys. He's not known for the knockouts. He's obviously a heavy hitter, don't get me wrong, but he's a better wrestler and a more endurance fighter than he is a knockout artist. And with Max the way he fights, and as well, before I actually say the next thing, what we got to understand about Max is, especially at fighting at featherweight, he's more than generally 9 out of 10 times, or if not 10 out of 10 times, more than not about this fight, he's always fighting fighters who have got a smaller reach advantage, yeah, over him. He's always one, he's always got the longer reach.
I think Kattar had a 3-inch advantage on him this time.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're always thinking, so even when he went up to lightweight, fought Dustin, he still had a bigger reach, mm-hmm, than Dustin. So it's not every day you get someone fighting Max with the same or bigger reach than him. And in the fight, you'd think it was the opposite way around. You just think, oh, this is another fighter who Max has got bigger reach, and it's not. Max was a smaller guy, so he needed to move in and out. And I believe that's why he was getting tagged a lot. It's not that he was getting tagged because he was shitter or whatever. Kelvin Kattar is that good. Max knew that he needed to get in and out fast, because if he didn't, he was going to get cracked. And yeah, for my liking, he paid the price a couple of times in that fight that he didn't need to. He should have been a little bit faster. He got the job done. He fucked him up, but Kattar was hitting him back with his own shots, and when he weren't moving fast enough, Kattar was landing them, and they were dangerous shots. It's not like if Max I'd put money on it. If Max says that he wasn't seeing fairies or having little birds flying around his head on a couple of shots, I'd probably call him a liar. I'd call him out on it, because the stunning, that little uppercut, that little right uppercut that Kelvin gave him to him, that stunned him. I believe that sort of shaked them cobwebs a bit. And Max sort of knew that, but he was a brilliant fighter. He's an experienced fighter. He didn't want to show that. He, soon as he hit that, like, right, changed up to the body. And that's the perfect thing that he did. With the reach that he didn't have the advantage, he was still able to do the perfect game plan, open up the body to open up the head, open up the head to open up the body, and always switching it up. And then oblique kicks out. We don't normally see him throwing. He was throwing a lot of them, taking the old body, Johnny Bones Jones style, taking that front leg away. Because if you're fighting a guy, now look at what he did to Santos. Yeah, fair enough. Bones might not have finished him, but Santos is a heavy hitting guy, so El Qatar. If you take their knees away, what happens? What can they not do? They can't knock you out, because they haven't got that movement in them to get that full extension. And if you're not a moving target, odds are you're not getting knocked out. And Max is never a moving target. He's always moving about. Fair enough, his head movement, he gets it because his head movement is not always there, but he can take a punch. He can fucking take a lot of punches. And like Dan Hardy said, give the man a fucking title shot, because if he fights out this way against Volkanovski, I don't think City Kickboxing is going to hold that title for, well, I don't think they're going to hold it for long.
Yeah, well, if I was Dana, I'd be making a phone call to Brian Ortega and saying, "Sounds Brian, mate, you're going to have to sit this one out."
Well, that's it. It's like you were saying with that as well, that's sitting it out. But let's go through it for a second. When you think of it the way it is, it's still in the UFC's eyes, because obviously in this day and age, I always try and speak about it a little bit more, or instead of like a fart fan or wanting to be a fart of yourself, because obviously there's a lot of politics now in this sort of sport, and you're always thinking what's, especially in the UFC, what's good for business. And with Max winning, that's brilliant, because it doesn't matter who wins in the Brian Ortega fight, because you've still got a selling point. That were a very close fight between Max and Alex, so you run that one back if Alex wins, because it were a very close fight. Yeah, fair enough, Max won the first time round, but if Brian wins, now you've got a bit of a dilemma here, because the first time they were fighting, Max were the champion and Ortega was the challenger. Now the roles are reversed. Can, if Brian does get that, walk out that fight victorious, can he take that confidence and ride it into the fight? Because without a doubt, Max is going to get a title shot after this. You can't, if you don't give him a title shot, you're fucking insane. But, so yeah, if Brian does win, can he take that confidence and overcome the fact is that Max beat me first time and beat me fucking
handily?
Yeah, hands down. It's not like he can say in any way Max didn't beat him. Max outstruck him in every point, and the doctor had to stop it at some point, and he didn't fight for a long time afterwards. So I guarantee that affected him more than just physically. So if he does win, can he take that into the fight with Max and overcome it? Or can Volkanovski go, "Fuck, right, now I've got to fight Brian and I know I've got to fight Max"? Because now Max, all the thing Max has got to do now is just train and get better, because Max hasn't got to push himself to an extent so soon, because he knows that Volkanovski's got to fight Brian.
Yeah,
so that fight's going to happen.
And he also walked into this fight with Qatar still ranked number one.
Exactly.
So with a performance like that, you can't say to the number one ranked guy, "No, you're not getting a title shot," even if he has lost two. It's just...
Yeah, but them two were to the champion, so you can't just say... It's not like he lost two to top five or top ten opponent. He lost them two, and the last fight that he lost, a lot of people still think that he won that fight.
Yeah, they were very, very competitive. Very thin decision, so I think this Max has really took time to get back to the drawing board, realise what brought him to the dance in the first place, and turn that dial up. And what a performance by not only him but by Qatar as well, to be able to survive getting hit with a steam train 700 times.
Absolutely. I will, from this day onwards, I will always be a fan of Qatar. Now, just for how much heart he's got and how excited I were in that fight. I don't think a lot of fans give fighters much enough appreciation, even in a loss. Like, that were a fucking war. Like, he could have easily said to his coaches, "I'm done." His coaches easily could have threw the towel in. His coaches easily could have said during the farts, dropped a couple of hints to doctors to maybe stop the fart, and nothing like that happened. He went out there. In a way, a lot of old school people say he took his beating like a man, and he's going to lick his wounds and come back from it, and I do believe he's going to, but I don't think a lot of people give people like that enough appreciation. Yeah, he might not have won, but when it comes to winning in that sort of sense, yeah, he's definitely won a lot more fans over than he has lost.
Yeah, I agree. So next week, there is actually two events. We've got a midweek event, UFC Fight Night, Chiesa versus Magny. But obviously, the big fight for next week is the UFC 257, the return of Conor McGregor taking on Dustin Poirier, and also the debut of Michael Chandler taking on Dan Hooker. So we'll be covering that show next week, and then with the UFC then taking a little bit of a break, we'll cover the Magny and Chiesa show the week after. So we'll still have plenty of UFC content over the next couple of weeks, but come back next week for the main event of the year so far, Poirier versus McGregor 2. We're definitely not illegally streaming it because we don't want Dana White coming after us, wink wink.
Uncle Dana telling us off.
He's got a surprise for all those motherfuckers, for all those motherfuckers who are going to be illegal streaming. But yeah, so thank you all for listening. Follow the show at Five Rounds Pod. Follow me at DJ Kirby. Follow Carlos here at Kirby_Carlos. Definitely go onto the Shooting the Sports Ish YouTube and Podbean to listen to Carlos's solo project, the Five Rounds interviews. He's a couple have already dropped. He's got some great interviews in the can, some really big names in not only in local hungry up and coming fighters, but coaches and more established fighters. So yeah, definitely go and check them out. Go and listen and subscribe over at Visionaries Global Media and The Chair Shot. We have much appreciation for them for being so supportive of the Five Rounds. Thank you all for listening, and that is the end.
And you, just before I do go, if you have made it all the way through listening to the end, we do appreciate it, but just to give you a little insight for the exclusive, if you have listened it to the end, you get this little bit. The interview that is coming up, the most biggest name, is the one and only Mr. He's coached a UFC champion, and he was UFC champion at the time. So adios amigos, follow and check out all the networks. Catch us next week.
Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.